You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Liverpool in Focus. One topic, one guest, every week.
Hello, it's John Baskill here from Stockholm, Sweden, and welcome to tonight's In Focus. Gags, that head of the Anfield Index, Gagster, he asked me to do another In Focus as a post-match show. Well, I couldn't resist, despite the nerves, particularly given our recent results. And so tonight's In Focus is a post-match game when the mighty Reds have just put two goals past Tottenham Hotspurs at Anfield. Fantastic. We needed those 3 points, particularly because Manchester United had gone ahead of us in the table today with their victory against, was it Hull, I think? I was just too focusing on the goals. Anyways, the guest on tonight's show is Steve Gennaro, and Steve and I take about 40 minutes to really pull apart what was a very, very positive performance from Jurgen Klopp's mighty Reds. So without further ado, here's Steve Gennaro. So, Steve, why Liverpool?
Well, it's an interesting question to ask anybody not in Liverpool, how they come to a club. You know, when I was growing up in Toronto, Canada, we never got, English football matches shown live or even tape delayed the next day. They were always shown actually a week later. So you wouldn't get to watch the match the following Saturday. You would watch the previous week's match. And, just sort of where I am in my age, I got to grow up, and the matches that were shown over here tended to be Liverpool, because those were, the good years, or at least, the important years in the, early 80s and to mid 80s, when there's a lot of action going on. And so I got to watch a lot of those matches. So I grew an affinity to, the players in the club at that point. But for me, it was really about, especially in the new millennium itself, John, when I teach at the university, and as the student population at the university here in Toronto changed, and the demographic of who my students were changed, more and more of my students were coming from other places around the world, and they were very deep football fans, and they were deeply connected to their clubs, and the clubs were, Liverpool, City, Arsenal, United, Barcelona, Real Madrid, all those types of clubs. And while I played football my entire life, and even played at a very high level here in Canada, I never really had a club that I was, deeply tied to. But I realized that, if I wanted to connect with my students in a more engaging way, that I needed to take up a subject matter that was close to them. And so I said, okay, well, let's turn to the Premier League, and who did I like when I was growing up? Well, I loved, Kenny Dalglish as a kid. So let's go back and take a look at Liverpool, and they're an easy club to fall in love with. And I liked the sentiment of the city. I like the sentiment of the club. I like what they stand for and what they've always stood for. And I guess that's how the connection came about between me and Liverpool Football Club.
What a fantastic story. That's a fantastic story. And by your reference to Kenny Dalglish, I wonder if you're in the same sort of age bracket as me. I'm 46 going on 47, and was lucky enough to see Kenny play in the early days. So we have a similar point of reference, I think, by the sound of it, if you've seen some of those people play. And here we are tonight, and the topic for the show is Liverpool, Tottenham Hotspurs. Liverpool 2, Spurs 0. And boy, those Reds are infuriating. Just before we started, I wrote down the words Jekyll and Hyde, and the right Liverpool turned up tonight. How difficult do you think it is for Jurgen Klopp, having such a side that have proved themselves in recent weeks to be so two-sided?
Well, it was an interesting month of January. If we take January out of the equation, John, I think that we can say this has been a great season for Liverpool. The club itself has looked fantastic. There was just, you know, there's 1 month in there where everything kind of went sour. And in many ways, it didn't matter what the players did or what the manager did. They couldn't get the potion right. You know, all the levels were off. It's like they lost the recipe. You know, my grandmother, you know, when she cooks, she writes nothing down. She's like a handful of this and a handful of that, and she throws it all in the pot and always, you know, smells delicious and tastes fantastic. And then I go and I try and recreate the same recipe, and good luck with that, right? And I feel like Jurgen Klopp was cooking like my grandmother for the first couple months of the season, and then in January he was cooking like me. So I don't know if he's found the recipe or not, but certainly the ingredients worked today in the whole stew, you know?
Yeah. The reports from the press conference were that he didn't give anything away at his press conference ahead of this game. Of course, it must be really difficult for managers contractually to have to give these press conferences ahead of the Premier League games, and then straight afterwards the players get pulled out, they have to do it. And he didn't want to hold, you know, he kept his cards close to his chest. But I wonder what they went through at Melwood this week as they were training for this. Obviously there was going to be the discussion and the decision that he would have had to make, whether it was Mignolet or Karius coming back into the side to play in goal, how he was going to organise things, because we've really lacked a defensive cutting edge and a striking cutting edge. And tonight, what we really saw in the first half in particular was an electric attacking performance. What was the difference in our attack tonight?
Well, I think we scored first. I think that's a big thing. You know, you talk about Jekyll and Hyde, and you know, I think the stat came out on Twitter today, and they said it on during the match as well, that at this point in their careers, you know, Rodgers and Klopp have identical records. And one of the things with Brendan Rodgers, if we go back and look at his time at Liverpool, was when Liverpool scored first under Brendan Rodgers, they were a different side than they were when they conceded first. And in January, you know, we as a club gave away a lot of unnecessary first goals to the opposing team, even at Anfield, and especially at Anfield. So tonight, I think getting the first 15 minutes or so, the match was really, I thought, fairly balanced. It could have really gone either way. Spurs looked fine. They looked like they were settling in. Liverpool looked okay, but they didn't look dynamic. But when the game turned on that, you know, they win the ball in the midfield, Ginny with a beautiful pass through, Mane with a great finish, all of a sudden they go up 1-0, and then all of a sudden we see the swagger, the return maybe to the old type of Liverpool that we'd seen earlier in the season. And then they start firing on all cylinders. And as the confidence builds and as the pace picks up, it plays directly into the type of football that Liverpool wants to play under Klopp. So I really think scoring first mattered. And I think scoring early mattered as well.
Mm. I think that's a good call. For me, the mechanism that results in the goal is that we've got the ball playing ability of Gini Wijnaldum. You know, last week we saw with Emre Can coming into midfield and labouring the point a little. I was disappointed. I thought Klopp made the wrong call not playing Wijnaldum last week. What we saw this evening, maybe Wijnaldum needed that rest, but this evening he wasn't far behind Mane for me as man of the match. He was putting in some silky smooth passes. He was very, very good defensively in midfield. He was playing across, you know, both you know, vertically and horizontally, going both up and down the pitch and from side to side. He was very instrumental. And then, of course, we have Mane. And although Mane's been back for a couple of games now, tonight was the first night I really felt that his pace showed. Would you like to comment on that first goal, the whole way it came about and the qualities that we saw in that attack?
Yeah, you mentioned both the key factors in there. I thought Ginny's pass was really beautiful. What a great through ball. But you see the presence of Mane to make the run. You know, I coach youth soccer, youth football here in Canada. I've got a couple kids that play in some different academies. And one of the things that I keep trying to teach the younger players is the importance of making the run off the ball. And it's not that, you know, Sturridge for us for a long time, was very gifted at that and very talented. And Origi as well, they both have the ability to do it, but neither one of them has been as good at it of late. You know, there was a time when Coutinho and Sturridge used to hook up together in really beautiful ways where there's the anticipation, what does Gags call it? Perfection in anticipation, right? Yeah. Where the midfielder sees the space where the ball needs to go at the same time as the forward player sees it as well, and they connect, and you make that off the ball run. We saw that in that first goal. You know, Ginny hits that pass, but at the same time, Mane's making that run, cutting through, breaks in alone. And I thought the finish on it was really quite nice. Lloris is a great goalie. He comes out, he plays the angle really well. And as Mane hits it, he hits it with some real power, but also turns the ball a little bit as he hits it to get it past the diving Lloris. And I thought that was a really great finish. And you see again, he scores that goal, and the confidence returns to this club. You know, he's the leader of this club. He's the best player on this team. And I know we talk about pace as being the big factor when he's not there. Mm-hmm. But John, I would go even farther than that. I would say the difference with Mane and without Mane isn't about pace. The difference is actually Mane. You know, early in the season, Dave Hendrick does a radio show with me here in Toronto called Total Football. And on that show, I said to Dave in October that Mane reminds me a lot of Suarez when Suarez first came to Liverpool from Ajax, in a way that people knew he was good and he had skill and he had talent, but I don't think they realized just how commanding he could be or how easily he could take over a match. And I feel like we're starting to watch that again. You know, what Mane does, he is an instant game changer. He runs directly at players, which Suarez is one of the few people that does as well. He runs directly at the defender, which can be confusing, mm-hmm. but he scores multiple goals in many ways. He's dangerous every time he touches the ball. He's dangerous when he doesn't have the ball because he makes everybody around him on the opposing squad feel very uncomfortable and always have to have one and two eyes on him where he is. You know, I think we have a lot of talent on this Liverpool team. I think Klopp's a good manager, but I think the only real game changer that's on this club right now is Mane. And I think it's just that simple. When he's in the club, when he's in the squad or the starting 11, he is a difference maker. And you saw it today.
As you said that, and I agree with you, you got me thinking about how the first goal tonight was through the middle. And if I think in recent weeks when we've been looking for the goal, so often we've been going down the sides, whipping the ball into a box without having a player who stands at 1 meter 95 plus. And here we've got pace, playing through balls, going through the middle, using speed, trying to hit them on the break, which we haven't done in recent weeks. And it's almost like that Mane gives us that way of expressing ourselves going forward. But still, I saw, you know, Coutinho, Klein were still playing, Lallana as well, still trying to play in a lot from the sides. And I was quite frustrated around between sort of 12 to 17 minutes. We were clearly taking over. We got more of the ball. Tottenham looked a bit unsettled. I thought this was probably the first game that we've really come out of the blocks up fit for fight, if you like. We came out of the blocks. We were really up for this. And of course, I'm sure the players were, given what's happened in recent weeks. But still, we were reverting back to type, trying to come in from the sides much more. Do you think we lack a player who's got pace on the, I don't want to say a winger, but another player that's got pace on the wings to give us that bit more of a cutting edge coming in from either the left or right?
I guess it's just a question of you know, tactics and how you want to play or how you'd like to set up. I think when we see Mane play, he frees up a lot of space for Coutinho to create in the middle. He frees up a lot of space for Lallana to not have to. Lallana just can't play the Mane role in this particular system. Mm-hmm. And you know, at the same time, I also think it's worth pointing out, John, if you go back and look at January, that Bobby Firmino didn't have the best January month. He scored a couple goals, but he missed an awful mm-hmm. lot of clear-cut chances. And I think if those goals go in, so if Firmino, who's a very talented player and plays a very key and important role on this club, if he nets a couple of those sitters that are there, well, you know, all of a sudden Liverpool maybe has six more points.
Yeah, Of course.
Seven more points at this point. And now we're talking about only being three back of Chelsea and now we're talking about a club that doesn't miss Mane the same way. And now we're looking at January very differently, or the offensive setup, or the way we play on the front foot, whatever language you want to use, a little bit differently. And so I think, like, sometimes the margin of error at the highest level, which this is the peak of global football, that the margins of error are so small. I don't think everything's broken. You know, Klopp is doing a great job. At the beginning of the year, most people wouldn't have had Liverpool 25 games in, sitting on 49 points plus 24 goal differential, 1 point off of second. You know, I mean, like, that, yeah, that's not where most people. So everything's not broken, but the perception of how the last month is rolled out makes us feel a little bit uncomfortable. And he's getting the most out of some players. He's certainly getting the most out of Lucas and Milner and Lana. Like, he's getting the most out of those. But at the same time, there are other players who he hasn't got the most out of yet. And I think Emre Can's in that category. Obviously, Sturridge, Origi. And so there's still room for more for this club. And I know that everyone wanted something in January. Everyone wanted a signing. They wanted something different. They felt that there are these big gaping holes in the club. I'm not sure I agree with all of that. I think the club's in a really good spot about where it is. I think they could certainly use a better back four, to keep them in some of those games and to concede less goals, I think would result in more opportunity to challenge for the title. But I actually think that where they are as a whole right now has been pretty good and pretty impressive, and I don't think they need to change too much. Klopp knows what he wants to do, and I think, in the final third or on the front foot in the offensive end of the pitch, they're doing, I think, exactly what they want, you know, for the majority of the games that they play.
You mentioned Bobby Firmino there. What did you make of his performance tonight?
I usually judge what I think of Firmino based on what Simon Brundish tweets. I'll be really honest with you, because most of what Firmino does really well, I don't think is witnessed necessarily unless he's scoring goals. His rate of pressing and, you know, in the final third, play off the ball, the running that he does, all that is apparently, according to the stats, very, very high level. His touch right now in the final third, I think, is a little bit disappointing. I know he's a high quality player, and when he's on, he's beautiful to watch, and he has game changing potential. All of that is there, but for me, he hasn't put it all together in the way that I think I'd like to see him do that. Having said that, though, you know, again, you follow Simon Brundish on Twitter, and you listen to the podcast that he does with Gags, Under Pressure, and they'll tell you a little bit differently about the important role that he plays for this club. So, you know, I think there just needs to be a little bit of balance. Again, everything's never as beautiful as it looks when it's all going right, and it's never as bad as Twitter makes you believe it is. When the match is going on, right? So, yeah. somewhere in the middle there. He's a great player. I don't think he's Liverpool's best player. I don't think Liverpool can depend on him to win them matches. You know, but I think that he can be an important part on a team that wants to win. Win the Premier League.
That's an interesting nuanced comment, actually, Steve. I appreciate that. I think my own view is I thought he was phenomenal this evening. He's the work he was doing off the ball. He was directing players. He was pointing for players where to go. He instructs for the second goal. He's pointing for the ball to go to Lallana, who's in a better position, who's free. Okay, Lallana doesn't hit it so well. I thought it was a fantastic performance. One of the comments I saw from an ex-Liverpool player, David Thompson, who particularly singled out Firmino tonight for doing a classic Ian Rush, pressing at the front, winning the ball in the final third of the pitch, our end of the pitch. So it was an interesting performance. I think what Firmino had and what so many players had tonight was that there was a better focus on control, pressing, winning the ball, keeping Tottenham's options for passing down incredibly. I thought Lallana, Henderson, Wijnaldum, Firmino were all part of this, Milner too. Steve, could you talk a bit about how you felt we did as winning the midfield, as it were, this evening?
Yeah, sure. Just to your point on Firmino, as you explained it, as you were talking about it, that's exactly what I'm talking about, right? Like, that's exactly, what you see and what you get are, you know, you have to sort of watch the other parts of the game to fully understand what he does. And Klopp even said it in the post-game presser tonight when talking about Firmino, asked about it. He said, his exact words are, "I don't think I've seen a better game from a striker without scoring." You know, so like that tells you everything you need to know, and how highly, you know, again,
it's a very
very important soccer minds or football minds, the way in which they see him is all you need to know about the quality of player that he is. As for the midfield, you're 100% right. You know, in coaching, we always say, right, win the midfield, win the game. Like, it's usually that simple, right? With the occasion of getting hit on the counter every now and then, or something goes the wrong way, a pen or whatever it may be. Mm. For the most part, you win the midfield, you win the game. And from about 17 minutes into the match till the end, I thought that Liverpool really dominated the midfield. They were aggressively pressuring with not just a first runner, but a second runner coming into the space, so that even if they were able to, you know, elude the first press, there was really nowhere to put the ball. You could see the frustration mounting for Spurs as the game went on, and really all of those yellow cards we saw in the second half, I think, were a result of continually losing, not even 50-50 balls, just losing possession over and over again in the midfield because of the aggression or the aggressive pressing from Liverpool. And so for Spurs to win balls in the midfield, they had to get extremely physical, and even that wasn't working for them. I thought Liverpool matched the intensity. Every time Spurs tried to raise it, Liverpool matched it again and again and again. It was really impressive, I thought.
And I think they took a lot of pressure off the defense, being so compact, playing the ball so quickly as well. I think while of course it's so difficult while you're watching it ahead of recording a podcast straight afterwards, is that you're getting caught up in the emotion, because it was a must-win game as far as I was concerned. Yet at the same time, I'm also looking at things thinking, analytically, that's an interesting point, how the game is going. And so I was trying to watch the midfield, and Van Alden there seemed to be so much more pace in our midfield play, that there wasn't the two touches, three touches that we seem to have had in recent weeks playing the ball across, that there was a much better sense of urgency. I felt Milner was able to keep up with that in the first half, but Milner in particular was the one player I felt really began to taper off in the second half through tiredness. Did you see the tiredness as a factor for the midfield, given how in your face they were, how physical they were? Do you think they began to run out of steam?
Yeah, at about 70 minutes, I think I tweeted out something just to that effect, that Liverpool's played great so far, great intensity, etc., but probably time for a sub in the midfield. And it's not that they weren't still running, but you could just start to see a little bit of that, those tired legs starting to show up on there. What you didn't want to do is give Spurs the opportunity to win back the midfield for the final 20 minutes. And that's when Emre Can came on for Coutinho as that first switch. And I thought he did okay. The point about Milner is an interesting one. And maybe John, back to what you were saying before about how tight the midfield was and how strong they were. An example of that is the fact that Milner and Lucas didn't really get exposed by Spurs tonight. And I think that tells you just how well the midfield played. Because if I'm Pochettino coming into this match and I see that team sheet, you have to be thinking, we're going at Lucas. We're just going to keep going at Lucas nonstop. Because to me, that's where the softest part of the lineup is, or we're going at Milner. And just, you know, and if Lucas and Milner are both on there, you know, you would think that the Spurs are going to have an opportunity to really run there. But no, like Liverpool, they were dominating possession in the first half, and in the second half, I thought there was an even better performance, because rather than sitting in and just saying, okay, we're gonna kill this game at 2-0, they kept their foot on the gas and they kept that same aggression and that same pressure, and they really wanted it. Milner's interesting though, because again, like I don't think he's a difference maker player. I don't think there's really much argument about that. I don't think he's as bad as the stick he gets on Twitter either, but I do think that, you know, he's a good squad player. There's a role for him to play both on the pitch and in the dressing room for this team, for this club going forward. And I like having him. I really do. I think he's steady. You know, he's used. I think you used that word. I think that's a good description. But you know, I don't like to rely on him for 90 minutes every single week.
That's a good call. I'm pretty much the same. I felt in recent weeks that the big weakness in the side is that when we push forward, often the weakness, the chink in our armor comes down that left-hand side, our left side, that there's a moment when we're completely exposed. That's where Swansea scored, if I recall. And it wasn't until the 58th minute, there you go, did my homework. It wasn't until the 58th minute that first cropped up in the match tonight. And I sort of made a mental note at the same time as making a physical note that, okay, it's at this point that legs are tiring. It's at this point that if we had Moreno on, he would have, his pace may have kept that danger at bay. As it was Van Alden who was sprinted across to cover things and sort of steer the ball out towards the corner flag. So, I mean, it is a concern. It will be interesting. I don't think we have the answer, but it will be interesting to see whether we go out and get a top-rate left-back next year. Early in the season, I think many of us thought that James Milner was doing a really good job, but I think as the season has gone on, he's got a lot of kilometres in his legs, and I think it's beginning to catch up with him a little bit. Before we move on to the defence, though, I think it's also important to talk about Jordan Henderson's performance tonight. Simon Brundish, we've already mentioned Simon. I have to read this quote out or a tweet out from Simon. Simon wrote, "The most bastardry I've seen a Liverpool team perform since Mascherano left. It's been well overdue." And I have to say, I love that comment because I felt that we really were a tough Liverpool tonight. And I felt that Jordan Henderson was leading the way. Was that something that you picked up on, Steve, that we were the gnarly bastards this evening?
Yeah, and I think that we were talking about every time Spurs tried to raise the temperature in the match, Liverpool was there to meet that aggression, especially, you know, they were trying to sort of bully their way back into the match through the midfield, and you saw what Henderson was able to do there. I thought that Dele Alli was really a handful, and he was really trying. He was extremely aggressive. Interestingly enough, there were 5 yellow cards for Spurs, not a single one for Dele Alli. I don't know how that happened. Because if you go back and you watch that again, in my notes, I just wrote, Alli, no yellow. Alli, no yellow. I had that about 7 times in but again, he was really physical and really aggressive. And every time he came in with something, you know, with a hard tackle or any type of physical play, you could see Henderson was right there. And, you know, if there was a stoppage in play, you could see Henderson jabbing with him as he was walking by. And, you know, I think Henderson always has a little bit of that feisty edge to him. But I think the way that the match went today, you know, it allowed him and the club to really step into that role, maybe kind of a little bit of a bully role. And I thought that they played it actually very well. Again, for me, the big thing was that, you know, Spurs are a great team. Like they're second, or they, you know, coming into the weekend, they were second in the Barclays Premier League for a reason, only conceding 16 goals. So you're not going to easily run through the middle of the pitch against a team like that. You know what you're going to get when you go against them. They're a very good club. And when they fell down 2 goals, you know, they didn't give up. We saw them come back from 2 goals earlier this season against City away already. So we know that the character that's in that club, and they got strong and they got tougher and they got more intense. And, you know, one of the big criticisms of this club this season, you know, from someone like, you know, Dave Hendrick, who I do a lot of work with over here, is that this team is they're a little bit too soft, too many choir boys, all that kind of stuff, you know, all those phrases. And I really thought tonight that the midfield, especially, you know, with the captain himself, they matched that intensity every time they needed to. And that was a big difference for them.
I really was surprised that because Taylor, the referee, he didn't really seem to be giving the decisions our way. But I really felt that Kane could have walked for that tackle when he came in on was it Lallana or Klein? It was Klein. He came in with no intention of winning the ball. He basically came in to take Klein out, and it looked to me, at least from the coverage on the Swedish TV, that he really went stamp on Klein's foot, and Klein was writhing. It was a very, very clumsy, well, striker's challenge. But it was surprised that no one saw red. Let's turn to the defence. And although Mignolet didn't have much to do tonight, were you surprised by Klopp's decision to stick with Mignolet? It was one of the big talking points this week. Would Karius be back?
Not really. I don't think Liverpool has their long-term keeper on the squad right now. I don't think that Mignolet or Karius will be here, you know, a couple years down the line, and I'm not sure that Liverpool wins the league with either one of these. Having said that, Mignolet almost won the league once with this club already, you know, and we've seen him be an excellent shot stopper, and again tonight he did that. You know, for me, that I think that's important. You need that confidence behind you that if when you make a mistake, that your keeper is going to make that big save for you. And if you look at, you know, the top clubs in the world, their keepers usually aren't very busy. But, you know, so they only see, for example, 7 shots, 2 on target, like tonight with Spurs. But those 2 on target, those were both great saves by Mignolet. And, you know, if he doesn't make either one of those, we have a very different match, perhaps a very different outcome. And maybe we don't get 3 points out of this. So, you know, I think that he deserves to be congratulated for his performance. And we saw this against Chelsea too, right? He stops that pen. Like, you know, to me, when stopping the Chelsea pen, like that's a season-changing moment right there, because it was a garbage pen to begin with. And he bails his team out again and gives them an opportunity to get, you know, a really important point. And not give away more points unnecessarily. And for all the anti-Mignolet stuff, I'll tell you what, he's a really strong shot stopper. At the same time, Karius, like, he needs time to sort of grow into his role if he's going to be the number one keeper here. You know, if we look at, you know, again, Dave Hendrick always talks about De Gea. When De Gea first came over, you know, he wasn't good his first year. Like, it takes time to grow into it. In America, they have a term for that in college, you know, where in your first year of college, if you're playing college sport, you usually redshirt. And that just means, like, you know, you sit and watch for a year, yeah. Right? You're not the same. And you learn about the team and the tactics and the league and that. And then as you get into your, you know, your second and your third year at college, that's when you get the chance to start for a big team. And so perhaps this is what we just need to see here with Karius. He just needs a little bit of time to redshirt. And I don't think in any way he's pushed his way through that he should be the number one keeper for this club for the remainder of the season, unless you're at a point where you don't feel Liverpool are going to finish top four and you want to know what you have. And then I say, fine, give him a run of games, give him the you know, 7 or 8 games, and let's see what he's got. But if you actually look at the table, you look where Liverpool is, you look at what they've been able to achieve in spite of that horrific January, and you realize you're 1 point off of second. If Chelsea, you know, depending on what Chelsea does this weekend, you are still potentially only 9 points off of first. And if you look at the remainder of Liverpool's schedule, it's not a very heavy looking schedule. So, you know, with Mignolet, he's steady. He's, you know, again, he's not a game breaker or a world changer, but he 2 big saves. And I think that for the style of play that they want to play under Klopp, when everything's rocking and rolling and all the players are healthy and fit and are ready to go, I think Mignolet is probably the better keeper for this club this season.
Well, that's an interesting call, Dave. I think you hit a very interesting thing there that I would agree with, that there are often knee-jerk reactions that, oh, there's a major mistake. He drops the ball. It results in a goal and a loss. And there's a meltdown on the Twitterverse, if you like. He had very little to do this evening. And I tend to think that teams concede when the team concedes the opportunity. It's very rare that there are individual mistakes, an individual mistake from a keeper that results in a goal. Sure, Mignolet's had a fair share of them. But, you know, Peter Schmeichel, when he was, you know, the world's greatest at Manchester United, was still very capable of making a dreadful mistake. Lloris at Tottenham, a good friend of mine, is a Tottenham supporter, and he says, you know, regularly Lloris has an error in him and is not as steady as us Liverpool fans like to think. It's just the run of the green, as it were. With the defence, Clavan was quite sick. Apparently he was in bed for 6 days and had lost weight. But Klopp decides to leave Clavan on the bench tonight and start with Lucas. Lucas came in for quite a bit of criticism after last week's dreadful performance. I don't actually think that Lucas was at the scene of the crime, but he wasn't the culprit, certainly. He gets the start tonight with Matip. How did you feel that Matip and Lucas performed tonight?
Well, I have to be honest with you. The fact that Liverpool walk out of this match with a clean sheet, I'm not sure that I can really comment on it, right? Because my my feeling about it was I wasn't happy about it when it started. There were several moments in it as I watched it where I didn't feel great or comfortable about it, and I kept waiting for the moment where it was going to unravel. But when Lucas goes off at whatever it was, 80 minutes or so, when he goes off in that match, I think, he did a pretty good job. Like, they didn't, there wasn't a moment where Spurs really got behind him. There wasn't a moment where they, where Lucas just sort of had that, senior moment where he just gives it all away and forgets what he's doing. Like, none of that happened in this match. So would I want to roll that same starting pairing out again next week, or maybe ever again in my life as a Liverpool supporter? No, but they did the job today and they got the job done, and the proof is in the pudding. 2-0, like, that's really all you need to know, I think.
Fair enough, Steve, fair enough. I said to you before I hit record here, it did occur to me. Now, I like Lucas Leiva. For me, football is an emotional, romantic thing. That doesn't mean that I have the hots for Lucas, but it means that I love the Lucas story. And of course, in the same way that I wanted Jared to get the title in his final season, and in the same way that part of me couldn't help smirk at how the fact that we won in Istanbul the year after Michael Owen left us to go win trophies elsewhere, I kind of hope that this season we'd get some silverware for good old Lucas Leiva. Just the whole romanticism of football. It's not, I'd be very surprised, very, 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 very surprised and amazed if we do get silverware now from that one tournament that we're still left in. But I felt his performance tonight was excellent. I wouldn't say that there were three match-winning moments that he... Because I think defenders can win matches for you. They can keep the other side out. But there were certainly three really important interceptions that he made. I felt more than Matip, he was leading the back line. He was giving the instructions. I felt he showed his experience and stepped up and was genuinely disappointed to see him go off on 80, purely because I wanted the 3 points from tonight's match. Like you, though, Lucas Leiva, Joel Matip is not my first choice pairing, given the centre backs that we have at the club tonight. And I did wonder, with given the injury, I don't know how serious it was. I haven't seen if Klopp said anything, whether it's just a slight knock, whether we will see him again, because with Dejan Lovren, with Matip, Klavan seems to have been ahead of Lucas in recent weeks when both have been fully fit. So it would be, if it is the last appearance of Lucas Leiva as a starter, I think it would be an excellent way for him to go out, given what we're involved in. So, because I thought it was a fantastic performance. I think Van Alden and Mane were absolutely standout. Firmino was excellent tonight. Henderson was also very good. But for me in the defence, I thought Lucas was good. I thought Matip, it was the best performance I've seen from Matip since he's come back, which suggests to me that he may be a player like Phil Coutinho that really needs to work his way back into the side from an injury. Some players can just walk straight back into it. Enough on the defence. What about Tottenham Hotspurs? They came back into it in the second half. We weren't as good and electric and terrifying going forward as we have been in the first. How well did you think Spurs did tonight? Were they completely off form, or did we stop them playing?
That's a great question. I think that they would have liked to have taken a point. I think they'll be very disappointed in themselves, especially if Chelsea win this weekend. Again, we're recording this, for those who don't know, before Chelsea play. So if Spurs all of a sudden find themselves 12 back of Chelsea, it'll be a very disappointing result for them. I think they want about 2 minutes back, and I feel like if Mane doesn't get that second goal right away, the game might be very different. Liverpool had several opportunities, but Lloris was, I thought, spectacular. I thought he played a great game for Spurs. And you could see them continuing to fight and continuing to push on. But I think the difference was that Liverpool met them at every turn and corner in this particular match in intensity. And for a team that doesn't concede very many goals, they'd only conceded 16 in the league before the match, and to give up two in 2 minutes is pretty much unheard of. And, John, there's a reason why they have 8 draws this year, right? There's a reason why, because they're just the style that they play and that they want to play. So, I think they came to play their game, and I think if you if you go back and you watch the game again without the goals and you didn't know the score of the match, I think you'd still figure out that Liverpool wins this match, because I just think that they were the better team all around. And so Spurs they'll look to regroup and get back in it again. I think for them, the most disappointing thing is really the fact that they have to try and close that ground between them and Chelsea is going to be very difficult, and you just can't afford to really drop any points anywhere. So no matter when you drop those points, it's never good news. And their most dangerous players never really had the ball in dangerous positions today, and that for them I think will be very disappointing, is that even when they were able to get their foot on the ball, they really weren't able to get the ball into Kane into deep areas or tight areas. And I thought we'd see some more long service from them in the second half. I thought maybe they just try and bypass the midfield a little bit and really start playing a little bit of long balls, but we didn't see that either. So I don't know if they just sort of ran out of answers, or just again, like, you know, the pressure from Liverpool was consistent from about 15 minutes until 90 minutes. It was pretty 75 minutes of fairly consistent pressure, and I don't think the Spurs were really able to sort through that.
So we started the game tonight behind Manchester United. Our next game is a Leicester, and we will be playing on the Monday night when everyone else has played. Do you think that's an advantage, given the motivation, the mentality? I don't know what's not been right of late. Do you think the fact that we'll be starting in a position where we know exactly where we are in our next game, that will actually mean something?
No, I think it'll be an advantage because we're playing Leicester. So I think that will, because
you're hopeful, are you?
Well, in a league match, right? So the fact that they've lost four in a row and they haven't won in the last five in the league, and I think that, you know, Ranieri really is focusing the energy in the team that he has right now to, you know, they're still in two competitions, right? So that's got to be the focus for them, yeah. Is Champions League round of 16, and that's going to be something that they're really going to have their eyes on and their energy and their focus towards. And I think that Liverpool, what they can't afford to do is just slip up, right? And too many times, especially in the month of January, lesser competition came in, and the intensity you saw tonight just doesn't get matched. It's almost as if they feel they can walk on the pitch and just make the game happen because the names on the back of the jersey and the name on the front of the jersey is going to win them the match all by itself. And, you know, Liverpool, if Liverpool comes with even three quarters of tonight's intensity to Leicester next week, they'll win.
Interesting, Steve. So is it Dr.
two weeks time down the road, yeah,
the 27th. Yeah. I think everyone's with you there. So Steve, is it Dr. Jekyll going forward now with Liverpool, or will Mr. Hyde return? Do you see enough? Do you think this? Of course, we don't have crystal balls, but do you really think there is enough in the side to warrant that Liverpool will turn up from now on?
Okay, so I'm going to bring this back to the same time, same discussion we had earlier on in this show, John, where we're talking about Jekyll and Hyde, and I said, you know, Rodgers and Klopp, similar records so far in their careers. And certainly Rodgers had a Jekyll and Hyde team where sometimes it looked like this was a team that could just, you know, bounce people. And then sometimes you just wonder, how can this possibly be? And what's the similarity or differences there? And maybe this is too simplified. Maybe this isn't true. And it's just my own bias that sees it this way. But I really do think that it's about having difference makers, that the difference between Jekyll and Hyde is, are your difference makers playing at that level? And I think when we were at our best under Rodgers, you had a player like Suarez who was, well, best player in the world over the last couple of years, arguably, right?
Yeah.
And I think even when Suarez was gone, we still saw those types of takeover performances, game-breaking performances by Coutinho or by Gerrard or by Sturridge, but they were just much less often. Because they couldn't produce them at the same consistency that a player like Suarez does. That's why he's one of the best players in the world. And so when you have those game-breaking, because they're still game-breaking talents like Gerrard and Sturridge and Coutinho, but they just didn't have the consistency to produce them for Rodgers game in and game out. And so we saw a lot of Jekyll and Hyde. I kind of feel the same way right now under Klopp, and that is, you know, Mane is that type of player. I really do think he's that type of player. And so as long as he is, you know, in your squad, you have that potential for a game breaker game in and game out. And so you're much more likely to have good performances versus bad performances. At the same time, you know, I think what will determine Jekyll or Hyde is what are we getting from those other players, those sort of the who are right there, who have the game breaking talent and ability. Will we see some of those performances? So Firmino, Coutinho, these types of players, will they take over games? We've seen Lallana this season, you know, both for England over the last year and for club. We've seen him have the ability to take over a match. Will we see that again? It feels like it's been forever, but I know we've seen Emre Can do that before for this club as well. So I mean, like, will other players step up and have game breaking performances? And if they do, you know, and then there's no reason to believe that Liverpool can't go on a run here. I mean, just look down the rest of the schedule. You have in March, you have, you know, City away and Arsenal home, so that won't be great. But once you get past that, if you look at April, you're home to Everton, so that'll be fun. Then you got Bournemouth at home, Stoke away, West Brom away, Palace at home, Watford away. Going to May, Southampton at home, West Ham away, Middlesbrough at home. Like, Liverpool can realistically go on a run here where, you know, 8-10 wins to close the season is not ludicrous to suggest if they play with intensity and players are fit. And then all of a sudden, well, you're sitting on 49 points right now. Is 80 points a realistic target for this Reds club? Because in my opinion, I think it should be based on sort of where they are and where they need to get to.
Steve, that is a perfect place for us to call it a night. Brilliant, brilliant. It leaves us in exactly the right position to be super positive. If people want to connect with you, where do they go to find you?
Okay, so you can follow me on Twitter @_sgennaro, or you, you know, where I'm tweeting out a fair bit. I do some Liverpool stuff. Sometimes you'll catch me on doing stuff for Anfield Index, and occasionally I do the post game as well for LFC TV as well. So sometimes you'll see me on there. I do a show with Dave Hendrick called Total Football. You can follow that on Twitter @TotalFootball889. And then, you know, most of my work and Dave's work in that is always on All in Sports Talk, which is our 24/7 online soccer or football talk radio station, allinsportstalk.com. There's a free app. You can download it from Google Play or the App Store. Press play anytime. And there's always great content on there talking about, you know, every league and every player and every franchise or club around the world. So please, you know, give us a follow, give us a listen, and thanks.
So thank you very much there to Steve for coming on the show. Like he said, do go check him out, connect with him on Twitter, check out some of the great shows that he's involved in. If you've got any comments or feedback for me, you can reach me at Twitter. I'm John Buskell, JONBUSCALL. And to find out more about Anfield Index and all the fantastic podcasts that the people like Nina and Gags and the rest of the crew put out there on a weekly or occasional basis, go along to anfieldindex.com. And you'll find some of the great written stuff as well by people on the site. 3 points. It's a good while until our next game against Leicester. Steve was smiling. I'm smiling. I hope if you're listening to this show, if you've got this far and played through, I hope that Liverpool put a smile on your face today. Let's enjoy it. It's been a really tough few weeks to beat one of the top sides in the country and get us back up there involved in the, well, the conversation for fourth, let's call it that, feels good. I'll be back with another guest, another topic in focus very soon. In the meantime, thank you very much for listening.
Liverpool in focus. One topic, one guest, every week.
Sports Social Podcast Network.